Start.
So I've got a backup, so I have to wait. Everybody knows. I have to learn how to use. It's an iPhone, right? I have an iPhone. I have to learn how to record. You'll show me afterwards how to use it.
It's a voice note, right? Huh? That's
memo. You'll show me afterwards how to do it.
So
you
can use it as you want.
Yeah, it's an internal. Cool. Okay, I'll turn it on.
What's your name? Do you remember Tribbets? He used to have like, you have like a Thursday night shoot, have like 15, 12 devices in front of him. It was like, you know, like
a okay,
reporter.
Okay, I turn this on
like,
now also.
Yeah, that's how you measure popularity of the rub.
All right. Okay, so this is an exciting new endeavor for all of us. We'll see, Bez Hashem, how it plays out. I'm optimistic that we can get together every few weeks. And this is a very, very thin, small sefer. Okay, it's called HaMitzvos HaShkulos, which literally means the mitzvos that are the equivalents, or shakul means that are equal to. These are the mitzvos. We're going to learn about certain mitzvos that are deemed to be Kineged Kol HaTorah Kula, certain extra powerful mitzvos, seven or maybe eight of them, that the Torah deems to be, right? We all know Talmud Torah Kineged Kulam. The study of Torah is commensurate to all other mitzvos. But we're going to see that Torah is not the only one, although maybe even the most powerful one. So this is some very fascinating historical background, which we'll start off with and share. So Rav Shlomo Volba, who I'm hopeful that some of you, or many of you have heard of,
sure,
was a great, great Mashkiach Ruchani, spiritual guide and advisor in Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh. I was zocha, I merited to meet him a number of times in my life, and to interact with him. In fact, my oldest son, who is now 10 and a half years old, was named after, we named him after Rav Volba. Mm. Not because we were so close with him, but because we felt a connection to Rav Volba, and Rav Volba was nifter the Pesach, which was about 2-3 months before my son's birth. So we named him Yedidya Shlomo. Rav Volba's name was Shlomo. Yedidya in Tanakh is the personality Shlomo HaMelech is referred to as Yedidya, which means Yedidka, like a friend of Hashem, somebody who's a confidant of Hashem. So in Tanakh, Shlomo HaMelech is referred to as Yedidya. But Rav Volba, more so, Rav Volba wrote very often about the Olam HaYedidus, the world of friendship and the world of interconnection and interrelationships. We have a chabur here of guys who weren't in same yeshiva, comparable yeshivas. That's like an Olam HaYedidus we're trying to create here, like a chabur of Yedidus, of friendship that surrounds Torah. So this is a big concept in his writings. He has a whole sefer called Olam HaYedidus. So in fact, they partially renamed his Musar Kolel in Givat Shaul in Yerushalayim. Posthumously, they renamed it Chazon Yedidya, the vision of Yedidya, also as a reference to Rav Volba. So, my brother, actually, I have my youngest brother lives, my two younger brothers both live in Eretz Yisrael. The younger of the two learned in Beis Medrash Pachad Yitzchak, which is the Israeli branch of Yeshivas Chaim Berlin, here in Brooklyn. Right, we're familiar with Rav Yitzchak Huttner's writings, which some say were penned, were recorded by his daughter, Rebbetzin David, Beria David, right, who was the head of the BJJ seminary in Yerushalayim. It's interesting, Rav Yitzchak Huttner is renowned for many, many things, his writings of Pachad Yitzchak. He was on a plane that was hijacked, Black September, and some of the Pachad Yitzchak writings were actually disappeared from that. That's why some of the volumes are very thin. I think the Shabbos volume and the Sukkos volume, the transcripts were lost in that hijack, 1972, I think it was that hijack, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And
he couldn't rewrite it, or?
No, see, they tried by recall, but it wasn't, I don't think it ever was exactly the way it was. But you can Google that, it's a historical fact. And what's interesting is that, so Rav Huttner only had one child, who was a daughter. And there's a separate discussion, his feelings about not having been Mekayim Per Ravu, like for the mitzvah to have, let's say, a boy and a girl, or two boys, that was upsetting to him on some level. So his daughter married Rav Yonah son David, who was currently, Ad Hayom, the famed Rosh Yeshiva of Pachad Yitzchak, which is the branch of the yeshiva in Yerushalayim. It's in Harnof,
yeah,
right? It's up on HaKablan. It's up at the tip of HaKablan when you come in to Harnof. So anyway, it's just interesting to point out that Rav Volba was older than Rav Yonah and David, but he was younger than Rav Huttner. And Rav Volba used to learn by Rav Huttner, And after the Patira, after the passing of Rav Huttner, I think in the early 80s, so then that was like about the last, that was about the last 10 years of Rav Olba's life, and Rav Olba would continue, he went to go learn by Rav Yonah son David. So Rav Yonah son David was a master of Kabbalah. Rav Yonah son David has a younger brother, Hillel David, who's a big postdoc in Brooklyn, he's a rabbi in Brooklyn. And he has a son who was a lawyer with me at Fried Frank many years ago. He's a partner at Fried Frank. Maybe, I'm not sure if he's still there or not. I met him recently. And he has another son who's a Rosh Kollel in Seattle. So anyway, so Rav Olba was chavrusas with Rav Huttner as well as Rav David. And because he wanted to learn, Rav Olba wanted to become an expert in Chachmas HaNister, the hidden parts of Torah, toward the end of his life. So I wanted to start off, because this is very fascinating. So Rav Olba asked, he asked for a letter of approbation from Rav Yonah son David for this sefer, Mitzvos HaShkulos. So I wanted to read through a little bit of the letter, just to give you a little bit of a flavor. It's interesting to note, you don't have this, but in the sefer itself, it tells us, these were Pirkei HaSefer HitOru, like the Chelek, again, not a huge sefer, but the chapters in the sefer came about from Sichos on Shabbos Kodesh Chukas, like the Sichos that Rav Olba gave for 10 consecutive years on Shabbos Chukas from the year 1983 till the year 1992. Rav Olba died in 1995. So this was Torah that he really said in the last, basically the last decade of his life, in essence.
And he would speak on these topics once a year?
It sounds that way, yeah. And ultimately it was put into one kobetz, one sefer, about the concept of mitzvos hashkulos. So why chukas? Okay, so that we'll have to explore why exactly parshas chukas he was darshing on these issues. So, but let's just look for a second here at the letter. Okay, so it's interesting to see the letter was written. This is a little bit perplexing because I think that's a samach, not a mem. The date is chafdal kislev tavshin. I think that's a samach gimel.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the year 1993. Rav Olba died in 1995. So that... if
2000?
Tavshin Samach is
2003,
right. So I'm sorry, I was saying it's even... Sorry, 2003. So it's 2 years. 2 years. He died in 2005, Rav Olba.
Oh.
So 2 years before his Patira. What this? Unless that's a mem, but I think it's a Samach. So the point is, you'll see in a second. So he says, Hod kavod malas hagon rav shom Rav Olba shlita... Mizikne mechanchei doros talmidei yeshivas. He's of the elders of the generation. Umetuke mezaki harabim. He's of the sweetest ones who gives merit to the masses. Yisa bracha meis Hashem. Right, he should deliver to him blessing from Hashem. So he says basically, kabalti hodoso hamesamechas. I got this. I got the news. I heard the news that basically that I'm going to skip for Sheomed, who, this is a Rashi Tevis, I'm not exactly sure what it stands for, but it's referring to Rav Olba, that he's about to release this book called Shevas HaMitzvos HaShkulos Keneged Kol HaMitzvos. Right? He's about to release this new book. Asher Rabot Amal Lehabit Kufa Achrona, meaning at the very end of Rav Olba's life, he worked very hard, he toiled on these seven mitzvah shkulos to understand like the essence, the core, of these seven mitzvahs, and he kept this kind of close to the vest, this Torah. But now, he decided now again, Rav Olba, nobody knew that Rav Olba was going to die 2 years later. But I'm saying he already had passed 90 at this point, so it was presumably he wasn't going to live forever. So it's interesting that now at this late stage he was going to reveal this information. So he says. He says, "Benogela b'kashas kvod torasol lavom b'machtav bracha." He says, "I'm going to because I can't eifshar l'sarev l'gadol. I can't zahalacha. You can't refuse a great person." So he says, "I can't refuse a great person." Now again, it's interesting. You have to remember, Rav Olba was older than Rav David, but Rav David was still a rebbe to Rav Olba. So this is an interesting dynamic. So
in this area, right?
And yeah, I can't, it's not my place to comment, you know, on
right,
whatever.
Yeah.
But certainly he made him. Certainly, Rav Olba made him a rebbe. I heard from somebody. Maybe my brother told me this, that Rav Olba used to come with like a lunch. You know, like you see like drunks in the street with the brown paper bags, and they put their beer in the bag. So Rav Volbe used to, like, cut off the bus, he'd have, like, a brown paper bag, and he had some books inside, and he was holding, like, Kabbalistic books, but he didn't want people to see. Like, Lahavdil, right? People here don't want, you can't, they always see the alcohol, so he was hiding that he was learning, you know, Sefer Kabbalah. And I heard that Rav Volbe came to Rav Dave and asked him to learn Kabbalah with him. So basically, in the big paragraph, he says, I want to just focus on a few things. He says, it's said about Talmidei Chachamim that as they get older, which basically means they have greater yeshiva das, they have greater clarity, more calm, they're in a better place. And Rav Volbe says, who many years, right, he spent many years being mechanech and madrich, generations to Torah and Amuna, so now, ka'et, he decided to deal with this sugya, the sugya mitzvah hashkulos. So, what's the point of the mitzvah hashkulos? Asher toelas inyan klolim yedua, shebomet kabtzim kol hapratim utmuna achida. There's a concept in general, like there's this mashal amahadav redoma. What is this comparable to? If anybody has any familiarity with the field of psychotherapy, of psychology, there are different approaches in psychology. There are some people who are kind of psychoanalytic method, where they try to get to the shorish, they try to get to the core of what's disturbing the person, and then a person might behave this way, but they don't focus on the behaviors. They try to get to the shoresh. If you can cure the shoresh, or like low self esteem, whatever it is, then presumably the manifestations of the problem in the shoresh will fall to the wayside. Other therapists are more behavioralists. They don't waste time or spend time trying to get to the shoresh, what their parents did to them, what they were exposed to. They're just like, okay, you keep snapping your finger. We gotta teach you to stop that. Like, we got to work at the behavior. So here, what Rav David is saying is that this idea of toiling on these seven mitzvot that are parallel to or weighty on the level of all the mitzvot in the Torah, so what that really is emblematic of is a klal means you take all the different, all the disparate parts, and you're able to see them from one vantage point, right? Yeah, the person behaves this way, behaves that way. Those are all disparate behaviors, but there's one shoresh that if you get to that nikuda, to that core, it will then be able to explain away all of the different behaviors that manifest. So he quotes from Chazal, different klalim. You know, v'hafta v'recha kamocha is a klal gadol b'Torah. B'chavakuk v'amida malachas. Tzadik ben Munoso Yichya, like certain principles in Torah, they all come to one point. Ki pizor hapratim harabim sheyotzim mikol echad. If you have different points that spread out from one shoresh, ultimately they're choser and they're regathered again back. It's all pictured. It's like you're born like Shalem, you're born like Yashar, then you go through life and you get pulled here and you go pulled there. Like we all have in our life different kufos, different periods where we should be this way. We're more engaged in Ruchnius, less engaged. We're focusing on our careers, we're focusing on family. We have different pulls, different pushes that take us away from the purity of birth. Right? We started off with a chavrusa, with a malach in the womb. And it's all pure. And then we come out, and we have exposures, and we do different things, and we meet different people, and we do different inyanim. And then there's like a pizor, there's like spreading out. But ultimately, hopefully, it all comes back to one point, or one place, in the end game. And he says, this is most emblematic of the life of Torah scholars. Kolzman shemazkinim, as they get older, zochim l'tosefes bihiris b'chal ha'tmuna. They see things a lot more clearer. You know, usually, a person gets older, they become like, sometimes they can become less sharp, but he's saying that, I don't know if he's talking about sharpness or acuity, as much as talking about clearness, there's a greater understanding of everything. He says, Me'ein olamecha tireh b'chayecha. Like, into the bizocha, to see olam haba in this world already now. He quotes also, it's famous from the Vilna Gaon, they say the Vilna Gaon at the end of his life, he used to sit, like, every day, and he would just review Torah Shebuch Sav, he'd, like, read the psukim in the Torah, but that would like be a trigger to remind him of all the massive amounts of Torah Shebaal Peh that were hiding behind Torah Shebuch Sav that he used as a, instead of learning through the Gemara, he would just read the Pasuk and remind him of all the different Gemaras, like a Tamsis, Right? So all the Torah Shebaal Peh, he would be able to bring it out from the Shoresh.
Like a what? A Tamsis?
A Tamsis is like a small picture. Like a Metziah to see. Like a little bit. Like it's a glimmer. Like a glimpse. So you look at the Pasuk, and you see in the Pasuk so much more that's behind the Pasuk, explaining the Pasuk. So then he gives them Bracha, etc. Yonasan David David. It's interesting. His name is Yonasan David David. So... But it's interesting in a number of ways. I mean, there are different types of letters of approbation that people give. Here it's like, it's interesting because he's using, it's very clever, like he's using what the topic of the book is about, like bringing it all into one, and he's using it in descriptive fashion to describe kind of Revolba's own life. And that he decided, he chose, like to reveal this essential Torah, which, what are we learning? Really, Be'etzem, fundamentally, we're learning, like, we're hopefully going to get a little of that picture that the great scholar got after 90 years of Avodas Hashem. At the very end, he had a certain clarity that you could only have once you've gone through all that. He's giving that over as a gift to us in this small sefer. As parenthetically, people learn the Ali Shur, it's very famous, Ali Shur Chelek Aleph, Ali Shur Chelek Beis. People learn Olam Hayadidus, which I think was written after the Six-Day War, about Kiruv and bringing people together, and that would probably be good for this Chevra too. A lot of interesting things. I've never seen anybody have a shir in Mitzvos Hashkulos. I'm sure somebody has. I've never seen it. It's not such a popular book. It's a very difficult book. It's a hard book, and it's the end. It's like the culmination of everything else. But I thought it'd be fun. So I thought we would. It's a different type of thing. I thought it could be interesting to do. It's also because it's concise and it's short, and it goes to fundamental ideas. So that's just to be aware that there's this interesting introductory letter in the Sefer from a person who's still alive, you know, today. Or David. He's probably not so young himself by now. He's probably well into his 80s, if not more. I'm thinking that, if I'm not mistaken, Rabbi David was a contemporary of Rabbi Gettinger, Zatzal. So Rabbi Gettinger would be about 90 years old today. So Rabbi David must be well into his 80s, if not more. So, good. So let's, you only have one other page, which is the introductory page, which is also very short. So let's just learn the Hakdama to the Sefer, okay? So the Hakdama starts off basically quoting from, and then after this, share one idea on the Parsha. This was nice to kind of, it's Thursday night, so one nice idea on the Parsha also. So we have here famous words from the beginning of Tehillim. Ashrei isha shelo alach batzat l'sheim v'derech chataim lo amad moshav leitzim lo yashav. Praiseworthy is the man who doesn't walk in the advice of the wicked and the ways of sins. He didn't stand, and he doesn't stand with a Moshe of Leitzim. Moshe of Leitzim is like people are mitlotze, to make fun, who are scoffers, mockers, right? So praiseworthy is the person who doesn't associate with wicked people. Kim b'tarat Hashem cheftzo, but rather studying God's Torah is his desire, and in that Torah he toils day and night, right? It's comparable to a tree that is standing on the shore, on the waters. Asher priyo yitain biito, it gives off its fruit in its proper time. Va'aleu lo yibol, and its branches do not wither. V'cho asher yaseh yatzliach, and the person who does this, who is like the tree that's rooted in the ground, which we'll elaborate on momentarily, that person will see a lot of hatzlacha. That person will see a lot of success. In contrast to the wicked, who are like kemotz asher tidfen ruach, like there's something that's very, look at the word motz again, but it's something that's very very fickle, kind of gets pushed off very quickly, like chaff, like it just gets like the wheat, the chaff, it just gets like blown away, like it's nothing. Okay, so this is the first pasuk in the book of Tehillim. Okay, so now Revolba says like this. So now already Revolba, I think this is Revolba, or based on Revolba's shirim. He thanks at the very bottom. He thanks his friends, certain rabbanim, who helped him like to go over the Ksav Yad. So he had help with this, but these are his ideas. Okay, he says we learn from these psukim, from dimi psukim ela, ki hayega batorah, somebody who toils in Torah, who works in Torah, v'kone otak kinyan atzmi, and acquires like a personal kinyan. He like acquires the Torah. This person is comparable to ke'et shatul. This is like a person who's like a tree that is that's grounded. What's the inyan of an eitz, a tree? know, Eitz has a lot of significance in Kabbalistic literature as well, right? The Eitz Hadas, Eitz Achayim, and Gan Eden, the beginning of creation. So, okay, just making an allusion. We're not getting into that right now, but he's just saying, like, right, what's the Indian of Eitz in general? Eitz is Hashrasha B'Torah. It's being rooted in Torah. V'hayinika mimena, and somebody who's rooted in Torah and is yonek from it, who draws from the Torah, brings ad alim the peros. That person brings forth fruit, and that's the hatzlacha. They see bracha. It things explode from that person, right? Lo kein haleitz. You know, by contrast, the scoffer she'enu mushrash b'Torah. He's not rooted in Torah. V'od menatek atzmo me'advarim. Right, he disconnects himself from the words of Torah. Shu mitrotzei tzaleim. He makes fun, like, ah, it's, you know, like scoffer, ah, whatever. That's a waste of time. Vuhu kimotz. He's like the chaff. She'ein bo kfiyah sumitziyah shel mamash. So he's explaining, Rav Volba, these words of David HaMelech and Tehillim are really alluding to the imagery of the person who is like that tree rooted deep in the ground. That's A, being nourished by its surroundings, and also is sprouting forth. So that represents the person who was very much mishurash, rooted in the world of Torah and the words of Torah. By contrast, a person who is a leitz can also, doesn't always have to mean a scoffer, it could also mean leitzanus, it means a lazy person, right? The person who's lazy, who's not driven, who enjoys eating and sleeping, and not really maximizing their potential, so that's also somebody who is minutak from the Torah. So psukei tilim eila melamdim ki inin limina Torah vahayegia ba hu hashrasha. What this is saying is that studying Torah, and not only studying it, but toiling in it, that's setting the roots. That's the planting. So shahadam halomda mekayma yemamash ke'etz bal sharshim. Right, because the person who studies it and fulfills it is literally like a tree who has many roots. Right, it doesn't matter what winds may be, it can't push that person. Right, this is the idea. Just the application would be, you have a person who's, you know, whether it's he has a seder and he's kavu in that seder every morning that goes to minyan and he's kovei itim matar. It doesn't matter what, you know, what comes that may, whatever business deal, whatever. I remember many of you will appreciate this. So when I first came to the Young Israel of the West Side, so that's, you know, almost 10 years ago, so I had come from Yerushalayim, and I was very friendly with Rabbi Jacobs, with Avraham Yitzchak Todd Jacobs. So, whatever, Avraham Yitzchak Jacobs. So I brought him, so I had a Nat Kufa in the shul, I had a lot of hedge fund guys who were not so mishurash, and I was trying to struggle, how am I going to connect with these guys? How am I going to bring something that speaks to them? So Rabbi Jacobs was in, and I said, you know what, I'm going to have Rabbi Jacobs give these guys a shmooze about his life and, like, what he did, like, how he balanced Avodas Hashem with working.
This is, like, after he became Rabbi Jacobs.
I think he probably had just launched the yeshiva, maybe, at that point, like, maybe the first year, and he was probably in. So he talked to them about, like, not being mevater on Siddharam, like, having set time for learning, and, like, he was talking about his shtadlus and bitochen. I remember, like, how much... You know, a lot of times, like, he, you know, it was like 9:30 at night, he could do the extra half hour, but he would, like, stop himself, because that's, like, the point, like, where he's trying too hard, and if he did that, then, of course, then he'd have to oversleep in the morning, and he'd miss his schedule up, and so that was, like, he was talking about, like, you have to have certain things, you have to do your work, you have to do it, do well, but not going crazy, like, making sure that the things that you have, so that's a person who's, it doesn't matter what comes... That and then, you know, and you, that's the, you trust that the bracha is going to come, not because you did the extra whatever, but because you did what you're supposed to do, you're responsible, but you're all made in these inyana. Now, it's very interesting, Rav Volba brings here, he says, this yisod is mefurish in the Gemara and Meseches Chagiga. Okay? So, I brought the Gemara, actually, just to look at it quickly here, so it makes it a little easier. So, the Gemara says like this, Gemara and Dav Gimel in Chagiga says... Here's the top of Yedivrei Chachamim Kedarvonot U Kimasmirot Nituim Balei Asupot Nitnu Meiro Echad. He's not quoting the whole Gemara, he was quoting most of it, right? That the Pasuk says that the words of the scholars are similar to, they're like goads and like nails. A goad, I know, a goad is like a long, Sasir Agod is basically a long stick with a thin nail implanted in its head. So it's like a, it's a manipulative. You use the stick to kind of stick the...
Like a screwdriver.
Could be like a screwdriver, okay? So the Pasuk says, okay, this Pasuk says that... It's a Pasuk in Koheles, actually. The Pasuk says that the words of the scholars are similar to these, like nails. They're planted, they're rooted. So Gemara says, Imad darban zem metaltal after retar metaltalin. So just like this darvan is a movable item, so is Torah also movable? Is Torah flexible? Is it something that comes and goes? Talmud lomar, so the second word next to darvonot is masmirot. It's like masmirot, like a nail. It's not movable, right? It sticks in. Imam masmirot machasrim after retar machasrim. So the Gemara asks also, so... That it's missing certain things. That just like says that Imam Masmerot, like a Masmer nail, is a machas or something. It's lacking somewhere a little bit. It's imperfect. So was Dvar Torah the same way? Tamalorm Netuim. No, it's really rooted. Divrei Torah par and veravan, they explode. So Rav Olbo explains the Divrei Torah mechaven et lomdem. What Torah does is it orients the learners of it from the pathway of death to the pathway of life. Aval ein hadvar metaltalim. They're not things that move. Elahim metziyat chazaka ukfuim kimasmer bakir. It's like a nail in the wall. Like that Torah, it's inflexible. Va'odzos hem netuim umenivim peiros. They also, they're planted, but they also give birth to fruit. So let's just learn this last paragraph here. It says, kasher ha'odom mushrash batar kdosha. When a person is rooted in the Torah, im kol hamon mitzvotav v'chukeha, with all of its mitzvos and its laws, person has to know tzrich hadat mahi atzura shel hakol she'aleihu tzarich l'shot b'chol maaseh. So it's very nice. You're learning Torah and you're doing mitzvos and you're learning Gemara this or you're learning Chumash this. But how does it all fit together? How does it all come together? What's like the composite picture of all those disparate acts? What's the tzura? Right. The word is a very important word. Maral talks a lot about Tzura and Chomer. Maral talks that the male is like the Tzura, provides the shape, the form, and the Isha is the Chomer. She's more the raw material on some level. So there's deeper Kabbalistic intonations there as well. But the idea is that Tzura is somebody that gives form to something. You almost could say like the vision, right? What's the vision of something? You can do a million things, but there's no vision. There's no picture of where this is heading. So it's very nice to do mitzvahs in Torah, but a person has to have a tzura. What's the form? What am I trying to create from it? What is supposed to come from all of that? What's supposed to be tzomeach? What's supposed to grow from it? V'nei chazal gilu lanu. So he says the rabbis revealed to us b'sheva mitzvos. There's seven mitzvos that are comparable to all the mitzvos, which basically means if you study these seven mitzvos, you'll be able to presumably understand the structure of the entire corpus of 613, which comprise a lot of Torah, because in essence, this is each mitzvah itself is comparable to the entire thing. So that's like it's like the shoresh. It's like the vision on some level. Because if you understand this, you understand it all. Because this one mitzvah, it comprises everything. Now we have to spend time on this because Talmud Torah Kinei Kuo, right?
I was going to ask what does that mean? Because I have different interpretations of that. But what are we going for?
So again, this is very introductory and very periphery, so we're going to have to spend a lot more time trying to understand what this means.
Yeah.
But on the basic, the most basic level of understanding, when you say, what does it mean to you when you say Talmud Torah Kinei Kuo? I guess the one we hear most often.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to learn, what are the seven? Maybe it's time just to skip ahead for a second. Denial of idol worship is one of the seven that's connected the entire Torah.
How do we know these are the seven?
They're all Chazal. In the next piece, which should be Zocha to learn, so he brings all the makoros, all the sources for these concepts. So, I'm just telling you without the sources right now. Just what they're all from Gemaras or Chazal. Basically, denying idol worship is one. Tzitzis is compared to all the mitzvahs.
Nice.
Machal Shabbos. So Shabbos and that desecration of Shabbos. Okay. Torah, which we know. Mila, bris mila.
Okay.
Tztaka.
It's
so okay, so he's gonna we're gonna learn up what it means, each one in and of itself. Tztaka, then he brings also Eretz Yisrael, living in Eretz Yisrael, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And then he brings also, those are the seven. The Baal HaTurim suggests that maybe tshuva, the mitzvah of tshuva, is also. So maybe there's a number eight. But there's clearly seven. I mean, look, we know Avodah Zarah is one of the cardinal averus in the Torah. So that we understand. Tzitzis is a little bit surprising, although you can argue, you know, Trela is a dom elayam, etc. Kisei HaKavod, so maybe that. Shabbos we get, right? Shabbos is like a fundamental yesod. Mm-hmm. Torah we get. Mila, you can also understand, because on some level it it defines us as Am Skuli. Mm-hmm. Staka is, you know, it needs to be tshuva, tefillah, staka. So the two of them, tshuva and staka, are mentioned here. That's interesting. Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is a biggie, right? The mitzvahs are all kind of, right? The Ramban famously says they're practiced outside of Eretz Yisrael. So it's interesting. I mean,
tshuva
says that performance of mitzvahs outside of the land of Israel are really just practice for when we get to the real, you know, like in the minor leagues, when you get to the majors.
Does this mean like messianic Israel, or does this mean like actual being in Israel?
No, it means being in Israel. Now, Lamaisa, even today, not every mitzvah can we perform even today to its fullest without a Beis HaMikdash, etc.
But you're not, but even nowadays, if you're in Chutz La'aretz, when I put on tefillin, I'm not doing really putting on tefillin. But when I'm in Israel, I'm putting on a higher level of tefillin.
So according to this approach, I'm not saying everybody agrees with this approach, but according to one approach, the mitzvahs are, it's a different level of kiyum, it's a different level of performance. That all of life is to be in it, all Torah is to be in the promised land, and being in Chutz La'aretz, like Chazal say, you know, what call a dog with Chutz La'aretz is like they don't have a God. There are Gemaras in the end of Ksubas. They're different Mekoros, different sources. Again, we're not going to get right into each one. We have to really delve into each one, open up each one, understand. And he already explains, we'll see about this from next time already, like he defines like each one is focused on a certain aspect of the human, like Avodah Zarah has to do with like how we value things, like Korach HaErech, and Stuck has to do with the ability to give, and Tzitzis have to do with remembrance, like Mila has to do with sanctifying the body, Torah sanctifying the mind, so that he's going to illustrate how each one of the seven is somehow commensurate or parallel to parts of the human experience or body, so on and so forth. Eretz Yisrael is, you know, land of Israel is Kedushas HaMakom, the sanctity of place, and Shabbos is sanctity of time, Torah sanctity of the mind. So we'll get into all that, okay? So he's got ahead. Let's just finish up this going back.
Rabbi, the surah here in this last paragraph is referring to the Kol HaMitzvos or just the seven?
He's saying we have to know, right now we're talking about all the mitzvos, right? When a person is rooted in Torah and Kedusha and mitzvos in general, you have to know what's the picture that you're trying to, what's the picture that, what are you trying to create from all that busyness with Torah mitzvahs.
Uh-huh.
What's supposed to come out of that? What's the tzura? What's the form of the mensch who is engaged in that toil, and or that we're supposed to aspire toward? Shleimus ha'adam. We want to. Alex, you mentioned to me that Rabbi Gershenfeld mentioned last week the idea of shleimus. I think you said that to me, right? Completing ourselves. What does it mean to be an adam ha'shalem? So part of being an adam ha'shalem. So we have to know what that means. You know, what does that look like? It's not Adam HaShalem means what's supposed to come out. Like we say, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. So what's that whole that's supposed to come out of all the? What's the sum that's supposed to come out of all these disparate parts? So his next step, John, is that he's saying that the Chazal revealed to us through the Sheva Mitzvahs what the Tzura is supposed to be. Meaning, maybe the way to say it is, what are we supposed to look like after a lifetime of engaging in Torah mitzvahs? You know, maybe externally, usually Gedol Yisrael, big people, even externally, they look different. The glow on their face, the yishuv hadas, the calmness, the perspective. So all that is supposed to come from the year and years of, and it's olamecha ro bechayecha, because that's where we're going. That's where we're heading to. It's like, all that creates like the yishuv and the simcha and the glow and the closeness to Hashem, which is really Olam Haba. Right? So you're building that. That's really what that is. Now most of us, you know, myself included, spend most of our time, unfortunately, especially if we're in the world, like, you know, out in the world, like, for tumult and like, you know, haggard and stressed and pressurized and, you know, and so all that is the antithesis of what's the tzura, like, you know, you know, if you know what that surah is like, and you see yourself behaving a certain way, like, is this the way, like, a person who studies Torah behaves? Is this the way, like, it's a certain picture. But if you want to get there, you have to know what you're aiming toward. So a lot of this is going to be to understand what is the refinement. That these are just vague terms. Well, what is that refinement? Let's define it, right? So he's trying to allude to the fact that these seven mitzvahs that we've alluded to, which are commensurate to the entire corpus of Torah, right? That's going to help us. Now, it's interesting. You asked, you know, why were they drashed on Parshas Chukas? So partially, at least, he quotes one source on Parshas Chukas here in the introduction. Vayishlach Yisrael Malachim. It's talking about different battles there, wars in Parshas Chukas. So Rashi comments that Moshe is Yisrael over here. It's Machokas who Yisrael is here. Ki hanasi hu akol. Like the leader is inculcates and encompasses everybody. The kavana bazeh is shehu atzura shaham. The leader is he's the shape of the entire nation, right? Like, you know, whatever, in an election year, right? So that's a very bad mashal, but like in an ideal state, you imagine, like, you know, on some level the president is supposed to encapsulate all of the citizens. Right? And we know it's not that. It's all about them. But the Lamaisa
represents us.
But they're president, there were presidents, there are leaders who really are, we'll get to this in a moment, we'll get to the parsha, right, who are selfless, who are really, it's all about the Am. They are fully, right, devoted to the task. It's not about them at all. Okay? So the Sheva Mitzvahs hein bechinas hatzura. So the seven mitzvahs, they're like the tzura of all the mitzvahs. If you want to understand what the Taryag mitzvahs are, then you need to understand these seven, and you'll understand what's inside all the mitzvahs. We're going to do in the upcoming chapters, we're going to be misbonein, we're going to think with great depth, and we're going to recognize that these seven mitzvos are the tzura of our entire lives. Okay? But Torah HaKadosha v'chol mitzvotah, Hashem Yisbrach Yazor lana bazeh. I don't remember, I saw this somewhere once in a footnote in one of Revolba's farm, I don't think it's in the Sefer, that apparently towards the end of his life there was a word in Kriya Shema, maybe when he said Hashem Elokechem Emes, something at the end of Shema, Revolba would like contemplate the seven mitzvahs. It was part of his daily avoda. To like, okay, these are such madrigas that like are so, you know, beyond. But that's the whole Ali Shor is all about, right? The word Ali Shor comes from the by description of Yosef, Ben Parat Yosef, Ben Parat Alei Ayin, Benos Tzad Ali Shor. Yosef was a good looking guy, and the women used to peek over the wall to kind of get a glimpse of him. So Shor is like a wall. So looking over the wall. So the Sefer was written for Bnei HaYeshiva, or people who live in the Olam HaPnimi of Torah, the internal world of Torah, who are bifurcated, who are blocked off from the rest of the world, from the secular world. So they're looking at the Pnimius, they're able to see the depth. So that's who Revolba writes his Sfarim for. He's talking about a whole Olam Pnimi, an inner world. So that's like this secular literature, the logotherapy, right? Viktor Frankl's famous book, The Man's Search for Meaning, that he wrote, I think after about his experiences in the war, in the Shoah, in the Holocaust, like the idea that it doesn't matter what's surrounding you, if you have like an inner focus, you're not going to lose hope because there's growth, there's things going on, right? Even Revolba, like at the end of his life, he was working on hasagos, like understandings and levels of grasping. So let's stop here with the mitzvahs of shkulos. So just in the remaining 5 minutes or so, let me just share just an amazing story that connects to this week's parsha. There's, in the last few years, interestingly enough, the Mossad, the Israeli, I actually heard this from Rabbi, heard this story from Rabbi Bernstein, from Emmanuel Bernstein. Okay.
Did you go to Machaniago?
No. I didn't. So I heard them say this. I heard this story once. It's a great story. They said that basically the Mossad recently opened up the files, and they discovered something interesting, that in 1960, when Eichmann, Yimach Shemo V'Zichro, was grabbed by the Mossad, extricated from Argentinian soil and brought to Israel to stand trial, ultimately he was brought to his death. So the president of Argentina, who was a devout Christian, was upset. He felt like it was a chutzpah that Israel would send like its Mossad into his sovereign territory. And he wanted like some sort of formal state explanation as to why they felt justified in doing this and why that was okay. So the government didn't know what to do. I mean, they just like went into Argentina. They basically smuggled this guy to Argentina. What can they possibly say that's going to justify their actions in the world, on the world stage, right? As we know, like, it's very hard to justify anything Israel does, no matter how in the right it may be. So I don't know who decided this, but somebody thought, you know, the Klausenberger Rebbe would be the appropriate person to write the official cable, the official response, because the Rebbe tragically lost his wife and 11 children in the war. He understood what the damage that somebody like Eichmann had wreaked on our people. So they thought, like, if anybody could write a response, he maybe should be the person. So they went to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe thought long and hard. He was a very smart man, and he said, you know, the president of Argentina is a Christian, so if I marshal a verse from the Bible, from the Old Testament, maybe he'll have some reverence and respect for that. So there's a pasuk in this week's parasha, Parashat Mishpatim, that says, "V'chi yazid ish al reyehu lahargo be'arma, me'im is b'chi tikachenu amus." If a person bemazed intentionally comes up on his friend with trickery b'arma to kill him, so a murderer basically. So me'im is b'chi tikachenu amus. Raja says, talking about the kohen. Okay, you have a kohen who's engaged in the avoda, serving Hashem, bringing karbonos on the mizbeach, in the sovereign terrain of Hashem, and the whole world is Melochar's Kvodo, it's all Hashem's, but this is a special place here on this earth. So you have a Kohen, who's a murderer, and he's on Hashem's territory, and he's involved in bringing a sacrifice. He's speaking to Hashem. So the halacha is, you're allowed to take him in the middle of the service, and you're allowed to remove him. You don't have to wait for him to finish his service. So the Klausenberger said so beautifully, so poignantly, to the president of Argentina, he said, "You see that God himself doesn't stand on ceremony and isn't makbid on his own honor. He allows the Kohen to be removed, the murderer Kohen to be removed from interacting with God, from God's sovereign territory. So how much more so, you who are a devout Christian, who believe in this Bible, how much more so should you not stand on ceremony and be makbid on your own honor when we extricated from your soil not somebody who killed one person, somebody who has on his hands the blood of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Jews." And apparently this argument of the Klausenberger Rebbe won the day, and like the president of Argentina stood down. So it's a very, very powerful, meaningful story. And it very much, it accents the famous principle of Mahu Avata, right? That it's a principle in life. That we're, and maybe this brings us back to where we started, right? We're supposed to always walk in the ways of Hashem. We're supposed to emulate Hashem. Mahu afata, like Hashem does, we are supposed to be. Just like Hashem is mitzamtzem himself, there's a Kabbalistic idea that Hashem constricts himself, he limits himself, he makes space for us to exist in this world and to partner with him. So similarly, we have to be humble, and we have to make space for others. And we have to try to connect ourselves to the Kedusha, to the holiness, to understand Hashem's ways and understand His Torah, and to recognize that we're finite beings and that we're limited beings and that ultimately we can't understand everything. It's a beautiful idea when we're talking about Parshas Chukas. So Parshas Chukas is the paraduma is the quintessential chok in the Torah. It's like a mitzvah that we don't understand. It's counterintuitive. It defiles the pure people that are engaged with it. It purifies those who are impure. It just kind of works like a kind of in a counterintuitive fashion. And it's interesting because paraduma comes to deal with death, right? A paraduma comes to deal with ritual impurity that comes from death. So it's interesting. How did death evolve in the world? Death came into the world ultimately in Bereishis because man tried to understand. Man ate from the Eitz Hadas. Man wanted to be godlike. He ate from the tree. We'll eat from the tree, we'll be Vitam Kelokim, or the Tovara, will be able to know between good and evil. So man tried to be like God in a way that he shouldn't have tried to be like God. Because of that, death was unleashed in the world, and because of that, we deal with we treat the antidote to death is Paraduma, which is the quintessential chok, which reminds us that we ultimately are limited and we're finite and we can't understand. And the entire purpose of life, in essence, is with our limited abilities and with our limited minds and with our limited kochos, we're supposed to work as hard as we can to perform mitzvot, study Torah, but more than that. And this is something that really only happens at the end of a person's life. You know, it's the culmination of the process of years and years of toil and study and growth and refinement of character, you're able to get to the level of mitzvahs hashkulos, which really represents, just like these seven mitzvahs help us understand all the mitzvahs, so similarly, and that's what Rav David said, that ultimately the Torah scholar at the end of his life, it's like, you know, like a fine wine, like the older the wine, the finer it is, that it's able to really, really be able to finally get a glimpse and grasp and fully appreciate and understand what the entire journey was about, right? Which is a perfect segue. I'm going to end with a perfect segue, because if you want to grab one of those books very quickly, so I don't feel any pressure to buy a book, but I just for fun, I just wrote a book, some of you know, it's called We're Almost There. I didn't even plan this, it just fit in perfectly. We're living with patience, perseverance, and purpose. So the idea behind my book is that we're almost there, meaning we're on a path trying to get somewhere, and many times like we're not there yet, and it's frustrating, and we want to get there, but we have to understand that life is a journey and life is a process, and we have to hold the vision, and we have to trust the process. We want to get over there, but we can't get there right away, and we have to go here, till we get over there. We have to develop tremendous patience, we have to persevere, and we have to have purpose. We have to be able to focus and see where we're going. It's a little bit autobiographical, like it has chapters on my life in the Ravna, and chapters on the story of how I met my wife and Shalom Bias for early years of marriage, marital harmony. It has a whole section on raising a child with special needs. Some of you who know me know I have a child with special needs. Strengthening faith in challenging times, friends, family, and community, and being present, living in the moment. So there's a lot of yesodos that have to do also with kind of trying to figure out, like, what's the shoresh hadvarim, what's the panemius, what's the amkus. I'm going through a process, and I want to try to see a bigger picture in it, and many times we can't see that picture until we get there. I was interviewed this week, and the interviewer asked me, is your next book going to be called We're There? And I said, that's a good question, that's funny. I said, I hope so, but I'm skeptical. Because, Bemis, like, if you're still alive, we're not there yet, right? We're almost there. We should be Zocha, like Rav Volba, like Rav David said on him, Olamecha, Tiru B'chayecha. We should be Zocha, that at the right time we should begin to really see and understand in deeper ways and continue to see deeper. But it's a process. And it's interesting for us, who are very much still in process, and many of us in the very beginning of our ascent and process, it's great to be able to see, to be able to kind of see it from a different perspective, where we're going, and bring that back to where we are now. I can turn this off now. And I'll add that just you should know also, in case you need to know, I have a haskamas here, so from some people you might appreciate. So, Rav Yonason Taub, who's a Rebbe from Yaakov, wrote an endorsement.
He's good.
You sure you didn't go to Machon Yaakov?
I didn't. Rabbi Yeshua Hartman, who was before most of your times, but used to teach in Machon Shlomo.
He's
not there anymore.
And he was
Rabbi Jacob's mentor.
Yonason Rosenblum.
Yeah.
His brother, I think, teaches in the. So you can see what they all have. They all have wonderful things to say about the. About the book. So I usually sell the book for $25, but because we're a chaver here, so I'll do $20 if anybody wants to buy it. So I think I have like 10 copies there. And if anybody wants me to sign, I'm happy to write the bracha. And all right. And if you want to take a book and pay me later, it's also okay. It's not.
Shkoyah, thank you so much. Alex, thank you for setting it up.
No pressure. I'm saying if we don't meet again, it's also okay.
But
I'm happy to, like, if around once a month, whatever the schedule is, doesn't have to be exactly once a month, but whatever. I'm saying every few weeks, I'm happy to do in this, you know, if we want to come together. And if you want to continue this Lima, great. I'm saying if you guys come to me off the bat and say, like, you know, Rabbi, it's fine, but we really want something else. So, you know, I can adapt. It's
not the, thank you.
It's
thank
not
you
like we're for, not a yeshiva. It's kind of like
thank
you guys. If 1 week you guys just want to do like Q&A, just want to schmooze, like you want to just like different inyana, whatever, we can. I'm happy to try to give over whatever I have to give.
I not think much, that sounds like but a good
offer. Yeah, and thank you for coming. And it's very. I thought it was very very shy, especially to what Rabbi Gershenfeld taught us last week, which kind of sparked this whole chevra. And what I don't know, what we've been learning, our whole hashkafa, which a lot of it comes from Volbi and Alter Slabodka, about having a shorish and a surah for ourselves, And thank you guys for coming, for being the
first. Alex for organizing it.
The first break
can
members.
Can I ask a Tova, so whoever recorded it, can somebody email me?
Yeah. So if you guys want to spread the word to the guys who didn't come, couldn't make it tonight. And sure. This is other communities have tried to kind of form a Machon group. I know in the five towns they did something, and it's like I said in the email, it's very, very kind of open for interpretation. Absolutely. How we want to do this. We could right now. I said in the first email we would meet on the first Thursday of every month, but if we want to meet, you know, every other week, something like that, we could do that. And if we want to come early and hang out and schmooze before Mariv and then David and then have the shir, you know, different things like that. And we, you know, I'm happy to host it in my house or apartment.
Right, right. I would say, I can't commit to hosting it every time in my house.
Right.
Having, like, my wife works as a nurse and she comes home, like, at 9 o'clock. So if it happens to be on a night when she usually works on Thursdays, but, like, you can always check. Like, if it happens to be she's home that day and she's not working, it's not a problem. But she doesn't want to come home at 9 or 15. She hasn't been home all night. And then, she can't, like, you know.
But if anyone has any other suggestions or ideas.
Is this not a possibility, just staying here?
No, it is.
No,
of course
sure.
It is. It is. Absolutely.
I like
thinking every other week.
I think we should go to Europe.
Otherwise, it'll take me way too long to get to my...
Or you can make it, like, maybe every once every 3 weeks, like, something like that. Yeah. Like, not every month, but not every 2 weeks. Like, maybe every 3 weeks. Like,
right. We'll do that.
Because I have different things also. I can't always... Right.